Welcome to the ID10T podcast, number 1068.
Can you hear the dog barking?
Oh, he was woofing a second ago. Oh, do you hear that? That's my wife's trying to talk to him. Like, I'm about to take you out. Don't worry. She's having just a full-on conversation with the dog. This is what happens in quarantine. You just start having full-on conversations with your animals. Actually, to be fair, this is something that we do when there's not a quarantine. So, you know what? Why blame it on the quarantine? Just wanted to sound cool is all. But I hope you're doing well. And talk to your pets. Fuck, come on. Why not? Have full conversations with them. Have pet tea parties. Do masterpiece theater. Put on costumes. Record and then put it on TikTok, because that's what all the kids are doing. God damn it. I'm so close to... I was so opposed to TikTok for so long. But then... You know, there are a lot of people who are a lot older than I am who are doing it, and now I follow the elderly. Those are the trends that I go after. So I don't know, but I hope you're doing well. Let's talk about the ID10T community corkboard events at ID10T.com. There's still stuff going on. Like Corey, who writes, in March 2019, I launched North Beats Podcast, chatting with people behind electronic music. After my fourth open heart surgery 3 years ago, I got back into playing synthesizers. Side note, Corey, it sounds like you're okay, and I'm very glad you're okay. So, Corey goes on, I found a great community of artists with support who support each other and play shows together. I discovered a niche of interviewing my friends about the technology and perspectives they each have. I branched out to find guests that I personally don't know and have a mix of in-person and telecommunication interviews. I perpetually thirst for knowledge and learn from every interview. I work 40-plus hours a week at Safeway as a produce manager in San Francisco and don't have time and energy to produce episodes consistently, yet my listeners, a few, giving back to the synth community is a gratitude. Check out an episode sometime of North Beats Podcast. Rate, review, and enjoy. So, Corey, this is fantastic that you're doing this. Everything that you've said about how at first you had friends on and then you've recently started branching out to find, that's exactly how I started this podcast. I was like, hey, I might run out of friends now after about a year, so I should probably start. And 10 years later, here we are. So this sounds fantastic. It's based on something you're incredibly passionate and knowledgeable about, and you're seeking more knowledge. And I just have all the respect in the world for it. So thank you so much. And also thank you for what you're doing, keeping the flow of produce going in a time where, you know, we can't, you used to take produce for granted. I don't know. I might go to the store and pick up. We can't do that anymore. It's very important. So you're doing, what you're doing is very, very, very important to your community. So I thank you. I'm sure your community thanks you. Your podcast is called North Beats and you're in San Francisco. I assume you're in North Beach. Which I was just in like the 2 weeks before the quarantine. So I love San Francisco and I send you love, appreciation, and praise and encouragement to keep doing what you're doing. Thank you so much. Events at ID10T.com for anyone else who wants to get your thing mentioned on the podcast. This episode is Vincent Cassel, who is an incredible French actor. You've seen Vincent Cassel. He's been in a lot of stuff. He usually plays a bad guy, which he embraces and loves. And he's in France at the moment, and so we spoke a few weeks ago via teleconference, video conferencing software, and he was great. It's been so interesting to talk to people in different countries, and I really hope this continues moving forward in the podcast once everything kind of normalizes and, you know, kind of gets back to some semblance of a normal life, which it will. But I hope we continue to do these Zoom casts. Vincent Cassel is in the most recent season of Westworld Season 3, which is available on HBO Go, HBO Now, today. And then I believe HBO Max is launching May 27th. So there you go. You probably are already watching Westworld. If you're not, now's a good time. You got some time to watch some Westworld. This is the ID10T podcast number 1068 with the amazing French actor Vincent Cassel, who we now join in a pre-recorded fashion in France.
Initiating ID10T protocol.
Am I where I'm supposed to be?
Yeah, I think you are. I don't think you dropped into a random podcast that was already recording. You are definitely in the right spot. How you doing?
I'm good. Sorry for being late.
Oh, you're fine. Hey, listen, man. You know, there are far more important things in the world right now than, you know, being exactly on time for a podcast. This is really not a big deal. This is a fun distraction that we're very lucky that we get to do. So it's totally fine. Yeah. Are you in France at the moment?
I am in France right now. I am in Biarritz, which is the southwest of France, nearby Spain on the map.
And you know, I don't want to linger too much about everything that's going on. I think this will be a nice distraction for people, but are you okay? How's your area for Americans that don't know what specifically is going on in France?
Well, you know, everything is blocked in many places in the world. We are stuck in, you know, at home, and so we don't go out, you know. And everybody respects that. I would say 99.9% of the people respect that. So hopefully, like in a month, we're supposed to be able to get out on the street again, slowly but surely. But personally, nobody's sick around. In this region in particular, it wasn't hit so hard. It was more like the east on the other side.
Okay.
But, you know, we're all in the same boat.
I know. I was talking to a friend of mine in Italy about a week ago just sort of saying, like, the interesting thing is what a community the world has become because the playing field is somewhat leveled in terms of everyone experiencing the same thing, you know, to different degrees. Do you still live in Brazil a lot of the time?
No, I don't live in Brazil anymore. I still have, you know, everything over there, which is like alive somehow.
Yeah.
So I go often, but I became a French citizen again, like a year ago. So.
What? Oh, so you were not a French citizen for a while, and you became a French citizen again?
Yeah.
And are they? What's the process? You go, okay, you know what? I know before, but can I have this back?
No. You cannot lose your French nationality ever.
Okay.
So I've always been French. It's just that you pay your taxes in a different country.
That's the only
difference.
Okay. Okay, so it's not like you have to renounce it and then go, hey, I was just kidding before. Can I have this back? And they go, all right.
Resident, I would say.
Oh, gotcha. I was reading that you speak multiple languages. Is this true? You never know with Wikipedia.
No, I do a little bit. I mean, but it's not such a big deal, you know. First of all, when you're in France and so based in Europe, you have, I mean, you don't have to because it's not like everybody does, but we have a tendency to learn, you know, at least, I don't know, Spanish, or for some people it would be German or Portuguese, in my case, Italian. But the other thing is that when you speak one or two Latin languages, I mean, it's already easy to learn another one. You know, it's not that hard. It's not like if you jump from Chinese to Italian to Russian,
right,
which are totally different languages. So it's kind of a cheat, really.
Yeah, well, it is. Yeah, I mean, to Americans, we're always fascinated because we're so landlocked and pretty much just focused on ourselves. And so a lot of Americans we're not, you know, multilingual. But I took Latin in high school. And it was very, very, very helpful to learn, you know, some of the Romance languages, at least some of the basics, because the foundation is all the same.
Yeah. You find things here and there and it really helps.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The other thing that I realized about you is that you and I have the same birthday. Happy birthday, November 23rd.
Exactly. The first day of the Sagittarius, by the way.
Yes. Yes. What does that mean? What does first day of Sagittarius mean for us?
Honestly, I don't know. You know, I would say it's a sign of fire, you know, and I recognize myself in that, meaning that, you know, I need to do something all the time.
Yep.
Hyperactivity. I don't know if you suffer from this too.
Oh my gosh, of course.
Yeah. All right.
There is a mild form of attention deficit disorder that I feel like, it, you know, there always needs to be some project. That's why I was wondering, because you know, just sort of reading about all the different things that you do, it seems like you're someone that needs to stay very busy or at least have to always be focused on something.
I don't know if that's the case, really. But if you always have to be focused on something and it's a different thing all the time, it means that you're never focused on anything, really.
Right.
So I would say I like to keep busy and I never get bored. Yeah, if you want to put it that way.
Did you when you were young? Was it? I'm just sort of curious. Like, is your career kind of what you imagined? Because you legitimately are, you know, one of the more successful performers in the world. And when you were young, did you have sort of a map for, like, if I at least achieve this, I will be happy. If I at least do that, I will be okay.
I dreamt of being somehow working everywhere, mm-hmm. like internationally. I never thought I would, like, be in France. So that's what I've tried to do. And maybe that's one of the reasons why I wanted to learn other languages, you know, is because I want to travel around. And, but yeah, you know, I wanted to be the bad guy and I ended up being the bad guy. So I guess I can't really complain, you know, I mean, this is the kind of character that I was attracted to when I was a young actor. And that's the kind of performance that, I mean, bad guy, you know, to make it short, because when you think about it, what happens with bad guys is that they don't mind carrying everything that we poor humans suffer in our daily life, and we don't want to express. This is everything, you know, the bad guys can express everything we are trying to hide as people, you know, even little things, you know. It's so you carry the dirt in a way, and I think it's somehow pretty liberating. You know, and to me, as a young actor and as a young man, watching those guys playing, like, I don't know, you know, it could be like De Niro in Raging Bull, you know, that kind of a loser, you know, but magnificent in a way because so ruthless. Or I would think about, like, characters played by Marcello Mastroianni, you know, weak and coward, but so charming, you know, and you know, all those characters, I think they're really interesting because they reflect reality more than anything else, really.
Right. Yeah, and they're also more layered and they're more complicated and they tend to be more interesting.
And they're more fun.
And they what?
More fun to play.
Yeah, they're more fun to play, I would imagine. Absolutely. I mean, when you're just a traditional protagonist in a film, yeah, you kind of have, like, one goal, really, and you really can't stray from that goal and, you know, the bad guy gets to be the opposing force that tries to knock that guy off balance. I mean, you really give the story its purpose. You know, the bad guys give the story the purpose.
You're the problem.
Yeah, you are the problem.
Well, right. Things happen because there is a problem.
Can you talk a little bit about the sort of process of, like, what the vibe of breaking into French film is? How is it? Obviously, French film is revered, you know, that I would imagine the same way that, although I almost feel like it, to me as an American, French film feels very elevated, you know, it feels very like, oh, wow, if you can make it in French film, that's sort of the gold standard for acting and art. It feels very romantic to me. Do you perceive it that way?
No, I guess, you know, the perception we have from things from a distance are always, like, kind of, you know, disrupted or changed somehow. You know, I can see as a European, you know, I wouldn't say the fear, but even the complex, you know, French and non-American hard artists have towards what's a so-called Hollywood, you know. Mm-hmm. Everything that is spoken in becomes Hollywood. It's part of this big, like, dark beast wants to eat everything else around it. No, but really, no, it's a market thing, you know, it's a market thing. It's a reality somehow, you know. When you look at places like France, you know, I think if we still have somehow an industry that is still alive, it's because we have laws to protect the market mm-hmm. from everything that would come from America, which is a good thing. Korea had the same, and they have one of the strongest and most interesting industry in the world today. So I don't know where I was heading for.
Well, I think you were just sort of talking about the perception. You said that the perception of the different industries is different from afar.
Exactly. So, you know, and you have this thing that French is like, you know, art and romantic. And this is, you know, it's bullshit. It's not what it is. It's this is like, because you can maybe it's a vision of Americans about old Europe. You know,
right.
We the past, we have places that are 1,000 years already. But I don't think it works like that. I think it's different. The system is different here. The industry is different. It's much smaller when you think about it. And it's not as tough as is the American market and the American industry, that's for sure.
Right, which, you know, is because America is such a large country, part of the issue is that, you know, when it's a system that's based entirely on commerce, there are a lot of decisions get made for how do we reach as many of these 350 million people as possible. Then it becomes more lowest common denominator. It's less, you know. I mean, I think especially with all the streaming services now, it has been weirdly harder, I think, for people to get some stuff made, even though it seems like it would be easier because there are so many outlets. I know even before the virus hit, I knew so many actors who were out of work and kind of scratching their heads going, but wait, isn't there a demand for a ton of content right now? Why aren't there? Why doesn't it feel like there are more jobs?
I can't really tell, but there are more jobs. That's the truth. It's like there are so many things being shot all the time, because they need content.
Right.
Good, bad, but they need content. We need content.
Yeah.
You know. So, but it's moving, you know, it's like the cars have been battered again and it's moving really fast. And, you know, it's definitely a moment where you have to adapt or you disappear.
Right.
You know, as an actor, not as an actor acting, but like as one of the movie makers or part of this industry, you have to see where the freedom and where the money is, where the creativity is, you know,
yeah,
where fresh and happening once again. And I guess TV became that thing mostly.
Yeah, TV absorbed a lot of the streaming services and TV, and a lot of cable channels absorbed what sort of used to be kind of independent film. You know, like it's now these, and now a lot of really amazing actors are doing limited series, like Westworld, you know, is a perfect example of. You know, having different different people come in for a season at a time and doing something that's very cinematic but stretched out over 6 or 8 episodes or 10 episodes as opposed. So they're just like really, really, really long movies. So is that one of the things that attracted you to Westworld?
Mm. It's interesting. Look, the movies are getting bigger and bigger and the screens are becoming smaller and smaller because we're not watching that on a big screen now. I mean, if you have the luck to have a home cinema or whatever, you can eventually, but it's not a cinema. Otherwise, you will end up watching like a long series on your iPad or eventually phone.
Right. Well, most people do. If you're you know, like if you commute a lot or if you're under a certain age, most of the content you watch is on your phone.
Yeah.
I mean, you have kids. Do they even understand the concept of sitting down to watch something on television, or do they just assume that everything is on demand all the time in their pocket?
Well, they assume. They know it is.
Yeah.
But anyway, I've been thinking about that for like a long time, really. And it's really a matter of size when you think about it.
Right.
You know, same content on any kind of screen.
Yeah.
The TV doesn't really exist. It became the computer with the, you know, the Apple TV behind whatever box you have. You know, it's all, you know, with a mouth and you have apps and, you know, it all looks the same for, I mean, look, on any of your device now, you can have the same content on different platforms.
Mm-hmm.
You see? Even on your phone.
Yeah.
Get it on Hulu and then on YouTube because it's been hacked or whatever. So it's what is cinema, what is television, what is, you know, it's just a screen. Where can you get it? When? Anytime, the closest screen, I guess. At a certain point, maybe we won't have any screens that we own anymore, you know? We'll just stop in front of the screen and we'll be yours.
Yeah, you'll just see whatever is on the content, some type of an augmented... It's
whatever is on your, in your, on your what do you call it?
Yeah,
on
you have a chip. Yeah, you have a chip, and whenever you go in front of a screen, it knows exactly what you want to watch. But that's... Mm. I do think that convenience, though, is... can sort of be the enemy of art, in a way, because if you're being shown things that an algorithm thinks you want to see all the time, what's the discovery? Like, what's the process of discovering things that you wouldn't normally think of or see? I don't know.
You want to know the truth? At the end of the day, because of all that that comfort of to be able to watch, I have hard drive with a 3,000... the history of, like, cinema, but everywhere it's available. I don't watch anything anymore.
Right.
That's the truth.
Because it's too much?
Don't you have this moment where you get in front of your TV and you start to look for something, and by the time you spend, like, 25 minutes searching for something, you're tired and you go to sleep?
Absolutely, yeah. Your movie-watching experience is just watching, like, 30 trailers for things and going, ah, nothing looks any good, and then you're tired. I wonder if now they'll just start making like 3-minute movies. Like, well, let's just make a trailer length movie. We'll just pay some actor a lot of money.
You heard about that, of course, no? The Jeff Katzenberg project.
Oh, Quibi, yeah, Quibi, 7-minute, yeah. It had the unfortunate coincidence of launching during the coronavirus. So I don't know if that helped. Because people are all in front, you know, just around with nothing to do, or if it hurt it, because obviously there's no real news anymore outside of the coverage of the virus. So, you know, nothing else is really getting through right now in the news because the headlines are dominated with the pandemic. So it'll be interesting to see if it survives. But, you know, you and I are old enough to remember a time when all entertainment was very separated. So film was film and television was television. And then 20 years ago, the internet started coming around and everything was suspicious of each other and nothing really, oh, you're a film person, you're a television person, that's an internet guy. Now everyone is kind of everything. Do you consider yourself like just a performer for everything?
Yeah. Honestly. I mean... You know, it's just a question of format, really. You know, if you feel that you can fit in it, that it, you know, why not? But then again, yeah, I mean, some TV shows that I didn't do for years in France, for example, I don't regret because still today I think they were crap, and you know, the quality became so interesting that at a certain point, you know, it's not really, you know, mostly what was TV for a long time? They didn't have enough money to make a good show.
Right.
That was, you know, and so everything had to be very close, you know, always talking it, and it was more like on the rhythm and the lines and the comedy, but it looked cheap because there was no money, you know. But now that changed, you know, what's the difference with a movie, really?
Right.
So, no, I'm just an actor. I go anywhere that there's a cool gig.
How do you decide what's a cool gig? Is it sort of a gut feeling? It's always a gut feeling because I always like to find out from people, like, you know, when you pick cool thing after cool thing after cool thing, anyone can fall into something. But obviously, when you can see the intention behind projects people are picking and even sort of looking like, I enjoyed you and you've done amazing films. And I also enjoyed you in Shrek, which was a fucking great movie. Like, so, you know.
Incredible.
So I'm always curious, like, how people know, like, what is the, because following your gut can be a very challenging thing. We get insecurities, people tell us our ideas are stupid, we question ourselves, but some people are really good at pushing all of that aside and just listening to their gut, and that to me is a really fascinating idea.
But I think, you know, this is the only way to eventually do something that you're... you see, if you choose everything because of your taste, because of your taste, what's, you know, then if you look back, what you did looks exactly like what you are, you know? Right. Actually, if you only do job for money, for example, or for, let's say, bad reason, because you want to be close to somebody or you want more fame in a cheap way, I would say, then when you look back and you say, oh my God, I did like a bunch of movies that I just can't stand, you know? And that would be... That's the only thing we have, you know, the actors. It's really, you know, a body of work after a point. After a certain point, some people will recognize themselves in it, and some people won't. But at least, you know, you're true to yourself.
Yeah, but you have to know yourself to be true to yourself. You have to figure out what that is.
I don't think you need to know yourself to be true to yourself. You need to be true to yourself. I'm talking like if I'm like, you know, always true to myself and so straight, but that's not the case. But, you know, you can feel when you're doing the right choice or not, you know, or why you're doing this. You have to be clear with yourself, at least, if it's not true, clear.
Right. You have to, yes, you have to at least be aware of what you're doing. Okay, yes, I took this job for money. That's okay. The next job I'll take for artistic reasons, you know? Is it just it's a constant balancing act?
Yeah, I guess it is. But it's not really about money mostly. It's about, you know, I don't know about what, really. I'm still surprised of, you know, everything that happens all the time. You know, when they call me for Westworld that I was watching, by the way, as an audience, as a fan, I was like, oh, that's funny. Because I didn't watch a lot of series, mm-hmm. really. And that was one of them. So, you know, I knew exactly what was the deal when they called me.
Yeah. What do you, this is sort of a bizarre question, but what do you think constitutes happiness? Is it a contentment? Is it a lack of stress or drama? What do you think it is?
A lack of stress is already a lot. And actually, when you think about it, this coronavirus thing puts you in a position where, okay, everybody is losing money, everybody, mm-hmm. mostly. But in the same time, look, we are not in a hurry anymore. And I know around me, people I know, I don't feel like that because I was pretty calm before this thing happened. But for some people, it really saved them. You know, it took them away from the madness. And suddenly they had to sit and to cook and be around people, you know, and cut with the rest. And really, I got at least three examples in my mind. You know, people that have been saved by the virus, I would say.
That's really interesting, yeah, because it's in the midst of this really horrible thing, you know, this is what we're left with, and we do not crave stillness. I think we constantly want to be in motion, maybe to be distracted or to sort of run from dealing with whatever it is that we're dealing with, not sitting with ourselves. And it's a shitty reason why we have to sit with ourselves, but I don't think having to be with yourself is in itself a horrible thing. I think it is it's a necessary thing, and to be reflective, like we need to sit and reflect from time to time.
This is the comeback of Buddhism.
I mean, you know, you're probably not wrong. I would imagine a surprising percentage of people are probably exploring Buddhism, Stoic philosophy, anything that encourages stillness.
Of course, you have time suddenly.
Yeah, you do have time. And I think I don't think the universe is a conscious entity, but if it were a conscious entity, I think this might be it saying, y'all need to slow down a little bit, and you need to take a breath, and you need to reevaluate, and you need to look at what you are valuing, and just, you know, think about it, reconsider it, see if you're following the right path or not, you know?
Definitely, yeah. But when you think about, like, the epidemics that they had, like, in the past, you know, like the plague or the cholera and all these things, I mean, it was the same, except that, like, you would go to buy some bread and die on the sidewalk.
Right.
It was all different, like, urgency and danger. And millions of people died from it, like back in the days, you know, in Europe at least.
Yeah.
And now, you know, with this, I would say not little thing, because it's not little, but this virus that is not as least as lethal as the one I was talking about. And we're still freaking out. Can you imagine?
Well, I think we're just... It's the panic of making sure that it doesn't get out of control or that the hospitals aren't overwhelmed. And so, yeah, I mean, it does... You know, I have had a hard time trying to explain to some people. They go like, God, why do we have to sit in our homes? I don't understand. It's like, well, because you don't want the hospitals to get overwhelmed. You know, like, it's if we have to sit around just to make sure that it doesn't get, you know, a lot worse, then we sit around for a bit and then hopefully, you know, it. But whenever there's a major event that comes along, I feel like we always reevaluate, you know, who we are and what's going on. But then we kind of fall back into old patterns again eventually. You know, I feel like we crave our old patterns. We crave distraction, you know. But I feel like as an actor, because you don't actually spend a lot of time doing the thing you're trained to do. You might be on set actually acting for maybe less than an hour a day. You sit around a lot as an actor. So I imagine you're pretty conditioned to sort of being with yourself a lot, right? You go to different locations, you're by yourself, you're sitting in a trailer, you know? So how have you kind of grown to be comfortable being with yourself?
I never thought about it like that, but yeah, maybe you're right. Even though I hate to sit around, to be honest, and on like a movie that has been well planned, you know, without any problems, you don't wait too much.
Right.
Normally. But yeah, you're right. You have to be alone and to be okay with that.
Yeah.
But 2 months is because we've been. I mean, how long has it been for you?
We I think it. Well, we're in our fifth week, I believe, fourth or fifth week of quarantine. Yeah.
Yeah. So like us.
Yeah.
More.
Yeah, and we actually have not. I think I've left the house 3 times in 5 weeks. 2 times were to go to the pharmacy, and 4 times, and then 2 times were to pick up takeout. But it's a whole thing. Like,
yeah,
I have a mask on and gloves in my car because, you know, the cops can pull you over here if you're driving around. They can pull you over and go, where are you going? So I, you know, I'm all gloved up, and I pull up to the takeout place. I open the trunk from inside. They set it in the trunk, and then they close it. So we've had no contact with any other people in 5 weeks.
What's going to happen after that? I really wonder how. Well, the thing is that it's going to have to be progressive, you know. But otherwise, I think people would just like freak out and go out and jump in clubs and kiss and, you know, whatever.
Some will. Yeah, some will. And some are going to be really terrified. I think the post-traumatic stress of social distancing, I think a lot of people will actually be really afraid, you know, because we're humans are kind of huggers. And, you know, like we, you know, I do stand-up comedy. I go do shows. I meet people after shows. We hug, take pictures, do high fives, you know. I'm not a germaphobe, but I don't think that's something I'll be able to do for a while now, you know?
I mean, that's the same thing in France. People kiss a lot, you know, everybody's like, mwah, mwah, mwah. This is over. I mean, it's like, hey, you know?
It'll be a lot of air kisses from 6 feet, mwah, mwah, yeah, that's for you, mwah, mwah, that's for you, yeah, that's for you. I mean, you know, for a species that relies on in real life interpersonal connection and touch and feel, and you know, it is, I think it will be more emotionally challenging than people realize, because the, like, we walk our dog outside, we avoid anyone, we just walk around our block, and I have a neighbor, and she kind of came forward to touch the dog, and I was like, no, you can't come close. Like, people are just, it's automatic. It's just part of our DNA. So I don't know what happens after all this. Or with film, you know, like, film is a business of like acting is a business of proximity. You're near people. You're touching people. The crew is packed in. There's a makeup artist on you. Wardrobe is, you know, futzing with you. Yeah. So what happens?
I have no idea. Everything is blocked right now. We'll see. It's going to take a while before everything gets back in place, I think.
Yeah.
You know.
Do you have any other... Do you have, like, personal hobbies? Is there anything that you do kind of for yourself that you've been doing more of the past 5 weeks?
No. No, actually. I love to be in the water. I'm a surfer. I love to be. Actually, I even got involved with something incredibly cool that is called. It's called foil surfing. I don't know if you know what it is.
No.
Foil surfing. It's incredible. Check it out. You'll love it.
What is it?
And it's a board that has a wing underneath and a mast. And so the minute you take a little bit of speed, you start to fly above the water.
Oh yeah. And I've seen that. I didn't know that's what that was called. Yeah. I have seen that. Yeah.
And right now, I mean, you're not allowed to get in the water here. I don't know about America, but here you can't even get close to the beach.
Yeah, they had to close the beaches after the first week of quarantine because everyone just treated it like spring break, you know? So, like, the beaches were packed the first week of quarantine, and then the mayor of L.A. came out and said, guys, this is not a vacation. Beaches are closed. So technically you can't, you really can't go to the beach now.
Can't surf and all that. But anyway, so yeah, you know, I play a bit of the guitar. I do like garden stuff. What do? I read, I watch movies that I've watched before, you know.
Do you still practice martial arts?
No.
No.
And I take care of my kids. That's the good thing, you know, is that you get to spend a lot of time with your kids. And so that's really, really enjoyable, I have to say.
I do wonder how kids are going to view this time. You know, like, are they... It'll be a weird thing in their past that in, like, 10 or 20 years, they'll be like, yeah, there was a period of a few months where my parents were around a lot. You know? I mean, I think the kids will probably... It must be a lot different from their point of view.
Of course. Yeah, it'll be a memory. And plus, we never went through anything like that in our lives. Right. You know? Even the eldest don't have that memory of being like, you know, they talk about the war for the one that we're around, you know, and there's still some talking about the Second World War. Huh?
Right.
You know, and that was the big thing in Europe. But otherwise, such a noticeable event, I don't think there's anything here, at least, you know.
Yeah.
You had 9/11.
We did, yeah. And life did change for a while. Well, and actually that did dramatically change the way things are conducted here. I mean, it's, you know, it changed travel, it changed...
And around the world, not just in America.
Yeah, around the world, the way that security is done. And I was in New York when it happened, and so I lived there at the time. And so there was a long period of time where the air felt different. You could just feel it in the air. People were generally nicer to each other. People were generally more, it was very communal because of this horrible thing. But then, you know, after a few years, then people just kind of slide back into their old patterns. They're kind of in their own bubbles again. They're not as, you know, it's not as much holding the, no, you go after you, you know, like that does melt away after a couple of years. And
then a little virus, and then we're back in business.
Now we're all back paying attention to each other again. But, you know, it's just unfortunate that it takes tragic events for people to remember humanity, to remember other people. It's just so, especially with devices, it's so easy to just get trapped in our own world, in our own heads, in our own selfish bubbles, you know?
Can I ask you a question? A technical question.
Yeah.
This is live or this is... we are live right now.
No. This isn't live. We're just recording this.
I wasn't really sure. I was like, it's really relaxed.
Well, I do a live television show on Sunday nights. I love live television. I love live broadcasts because you just can't second guess it. It's like whatever happens, happens. And there's a little bit of a...
Yeah.
Have you ever done live TV or anything before? Like not a talk show, but like real live, anything live?
Oh, no.
There's a real acceleration to it, you know, but a podcast is just a long conversation, and it's one of the reasons why I've liked doing them for so long, because I get to meet people like yourself that I've been watching for years, that I think are really cool. And then it's just like a conversation. Like we met at a cafe and I'm like, oh, Vincent, he seems nice. Let's get to know each other. Because in America, at least, I don't know what it was like in France, but in America, media was becoming so short attention span, sound bites, You know, like you've done a million junkets, you know? It's like you get the same five questions.
Bim, bam, boom, crack.
You feel like, yeah, you feel like you're a prop. Like, you don't feel like you're human. And then, you know, podcasts come along, and then it's like, oh, what are you know, what's Vincent like as a human being? He doesn't really even have to be talking about anything specific, but, you know, if I were to hang out with this guy for an hour, what would that be like? And so that's kind of what the vibe of this is.
I get it. That's totally how it feels, by the way.
Oh, good. At what point in your career did you kind of say, like, you know, I'm ready. I want to do English speaking films. I'm kind of interested in the American market. Did that fall into your lap, or was it something that you actively pursued?
Well, I never really thought about it like that. But let's say I would, as I was saying, you know, it's not. I never thought about myself like. I never thought I could fit in the French industry, to be honest, because I grew up on an American culture mostly. You know, my mother lived in New York, so I was there pretty early, and so it was a lot about hip hop and all about, you know, Broadway and Scorsese and all these things. You know, I mean, I grew up with that imagery. Mm-hmm. So then when I was 17, I moved to New York and I studied over there for like a year. And that's when I realized I was very French.
That's so fascinating that it took a different culture reflecting back at you to make you realize, like, oh, actually, yeah, I do identify as French.
See what I would miss. And I was dreaming of New York. I mean, I was a total New York freak for years. I mean, I would like be excited to get into the plane because I would go to the Roxy, I would go to the Danceteria and all those clubs. You know, it was like, it was really, really strong. The end of the 80s and the beginning of the 90s in New York was so crazy. You know, it was like the center of everything I liked, really. Yeah. You know? But then being there 24/7, I realized that I missed my little village called Paris. Because the vibe is different, you know. The minute you get into Paris, you will hear like the bells of the fucking church,
yep.
You know, and then some birds, and it's a different vibe. It's not as, but we're slower, you know. The thing is that things take longer time to happen because we overthink everything. You know, the country of America and Brazil, which are very young countries where things happen much more. On the moment, you know, mm-hmm. I'm European and I'm Parisian, I have to say, with everything that comes.
You've also had the luxury of being able to live in different cultures, like to be immersed in different cultures.
Totally, totally. And I think it's a wonderful thing because that's how I understood my country. It's traveling around. When you travel around and I see what I miss in France, then, you know, when I go back to France, I don't complain as much. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, ugh, that thing that I can't put a word on, that I recognize my identity, what is it? That I can find in Italy, in Spain, you know, Europe has that thing that, but then I was crazy about New York and I spent like a long time in Brazil, who is another very young country where people don't think too much and shit happens all the time.
Yeah.
But it's refreshing, it's young, it's fresh, it's new, it's still happening. Here, it kind of happened.
Right.
You know?
Right.
So we're wiser, let's say, maybe, but we're older. In the culture.
That is funny to think about it like that, because I think the American experience of... My wife and I went to Italy and Paris and London last year, and... Americans always complain about, like, God, the service is so slow in these French cafes, you know. And it was funny to hear you say, like, you know, we take more of our time, you know, because you're an older culture, you're not as in a hurry, and we're so in a hurry, like, God, I want this fucking coffee. Why is it taking so long? You know, we're so accustomed to like now.
And we tend, because slowly but surely, Europe is getting more and more Americanized in the way of living because of globalization and all that. But we're still, and if you go to Italy and Spain is like, you know, and then Brazil and some part of Brazil in Bahia, it's like, woohoo,
But you can't complain, because when you go there and you go to those places, because you want to have this thing, this different relationship with time.
Right.
And now everybody has it for free.
Yeah. And also, you know, for people who, I wonder if there are people who kept putting off traveling. You know, I'll go travel some other time, or I don't have time, or I'm busy, or I'm working, or when it, you know, that are now regretful, like shit. Like I feel so lucky that we went to Italy and France and the UK last year in May, because I would really be pining for, because you know, like it'll be a while before it'll be. I just feel like it'll be a little while. You know, even when they open everything back up, the first thing we're gonna do is probably not, you know, go like travel internationally. We'll probably just kind of wait, see how everything plays out, you know.
I think we won't have the choice anyway. I think the borders between at least like countries and even more like continents, it's going to take a little while before everybody feels, you know. And South America was a little late, and actually they still are. And so it's going to take a little more time for them to adjust for the virus and all.
Yeah. It was so surreal, and it must be surreal for you too, but when we were there in May last year, the Notre Dame fire had just happened.
And I know. My daughter was born that day.
She was born that day?
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Really?
That's a really fascinating...
detail.
That is a really interesting... I mean, it must have been such a... Oh, my gosh, yay! Oh, what is happening? I mean... You know, there's so many things that are happening in the world right now that feel epic, you know, like and definitely not in a great way. You know, these, you know, fires in Australia and Notre Dame burning, and now there's a pandemic. And then, you know, it just is this just the course of life, or are we just more aware of everything now because, you know, we have access to information all the time?
I would have a tendency to say that it's because we know more and more on the minute, so we are totally bombarded by information and everything that happens. But I think there has been like tsunamis we never heard about in the past, you know, or people dying because of a landslide or some disease, or yeah, you know.
I just feel like when I have kids, what am I going to tell them, you know? Like, because if you just look at what's available in the news, everything is, it's just tragedy. And so how do you tell a kid, like, hey, listen, there's a lot of shit going on in life and in the world, but it's not all bad. There are some good things, but you really do have to, you have to dig for it, you know? It's not just readily available. You have to really find it.
No, I would say don't worry. Everything is going to be all right, but focus on surviving.
Right. Well, you said earlier on, like, you were a pretty calm guy. I mean, I is that just part of your DNA, or was that, I don't know, did you have a role model? Like, I love to talk to calm people, because I just, like, did you learn that, or you just were not, is your chemistry just calm?
I'm not calm at all. I am not calm at all. I'm super excited all the time. I just focus on my breathing, because I know this is the only way out.
As someone who meditates, I know exactly what you're talking about. It's really hard to do sometimes.
Yes, it is. But no, I'm not calm at all. I'm sure, you know, the Sagittarius... a lot of fire, and so you have to canalize it somehow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Are you writing? Is there anything else that you're working on at the moment, or you're just taking this time off?
No, right now I'm taking care of my kids. I got three girls, and they're here with me, so I'm cooking, mostly, and, you know, doing shit with them, so...
Are you homeschooling at all? Are you having to? Are because I have some friends who are parents who are like now have become teachers to their kids.
Of course, that's what we do. That's what we do. So you know, it's not like I get bored at any time.
right. And what advice do you have for people who are like yourself, like me, like people who constantly have to be doing stuff and feel like I don't know what to do without the world to access? You know, I'm kind of going crazy. Would you just say to them, like, well, just breathe, or pick up a hobby, or focus on something else? Like, what's your advice for people who are hyperactive?
Well, pick a hobby. Yeah, I mean, you know, a hobby is very superficial. You know, just the word. You know, it's like do something where you have fun doing it. You know, whatever, really. Something that makes you, you know, wake up in the morning, enjoy, be ready to take some risk, you know, whatever it is. I'm not talking about work, but do something that, you know, makes you feel alive and breathe.
And for you, that's foil surfing when you're able to do it.
Yeah, especially, I mean, everything that goes in the water, I'm very attracted by the ocean. So when I can spend time doing it, if I spend a day or a few hours in the day in the ocean, at the end of the day, I don't need anything. I will just, you know, I'm okay. I've done what I had to do.
Is there a type of movie that you haven't, you've done films in Portuguese, Italian, French, English. Is there anything that you haven't conquered yet that you still... Is there like a big goal in mind, like someday I really want to do that?
I don't have that. Honestly, I don't. I never had it. I never had this goal. I always worked. I never tried to make money. I wasn't rich, but I was making money. I was one of my richest friends. You know? Good doing like shitty jobs. I always, you know, had enough to live. And so I never thought about, like, I want to do this character, I want to work this, I want to get this prize. Or it's really about, like, honestly, you know, we were talking about the choices. Yes, of course you do good choices, but never forget that you only choose in what has been proposed to you.
Right.
You know, think about it. So it's always a game of, like, you know, what do you do? How do you play your cards, really? How do you play your cards? That's what it is, you know, because sometimes, you know, they can call you for something and you're like, on paper, it's like, you know, but the opportunity is kind of cool. What can I do with it? Mm-hmm. You know, how juggle it off, you know, and you know, manage to make a dollar out of 50 cents.
Well, I've never really heard that approach before because, you know, listen, America, I don't know what America's very much a self-help society. There's a lot of, like, realizing your goals. I mean, I tell people all the time, write down goals if you want to, you know, use them as a roadmap. But hearing you say, like, I don't think about goals. You're sort of just in the moment. You just kind of find things that you like to do in the moment. And that's really interesting and attractive to me because if you're always thinking about the future, then you're not really focusing on the present, or you're not living in the present, you're not experiencing the present because you're always thinking ahead.
Totally, and you end up working all the time. And that's what I've seen with quite a lot of American actors that I've been working with. It's like they work all the time. And when you work all the time, you end up thinking that what you do is important. Mm-hmm. Which is, I mean, it's important to take your job, you know, seriously, but... it's not the Professor Raoult who just found the chloroquine who might save the world. You know what I'm saying? I always said, you know, because at a certain point I was involved in too many projects, I remember, and I was like planned like ahead, 1 year ahead. And that was really the scariest thing for me. And at a certain point, like a lot of projects did collapse. And I mean, a lot of people would say, ah, fuck, man. This project, you know, that doesn't going to work. It's not going to work. And it's just, no, I felt free. I felt free because I think to go on set with the desire to go on set is one of the most important things in an actor's life. If you go on set to work, you're fucked. So I would say to go on vacation is definitely part of the job because after a point, you know, when you spend like time doing your hobbies and stuff like that, you're like, okay, so what do we do now? Where is my next fight?
Right.
But if you work all the time, there's no next fight. You're in a perpetual fight, so you lose I would say, perspective somehow.
Right. Yeah, because I think you're trying to make your job your identity, but it's not...
Never become what you do. Never become what you do.
Right.
If you can. You know?
Right.
That would
right.
be so sad.
Well, and also, you know, as an artist, you kind of need to refuel. Like, you need to have experiences to then be able to re-express them. But if you're just tapping that... if you're just tapping that fountain all the time and not refilling it, then I would imagine you would get pretty empty after a certain period of time.
Or you just keep on saying the same thing. I know that, like, through the different experiences I had in life, you know, there were some things that when I play them on set, I'm like, I don't think 2 years ago I would have been able to do this. I mean, not like that, at least.
Mm-hmm.
You know, differently. So, yeah, what you go through, whatever it is, joy and pain, is interesting for an actor. Yes, definitely.
Yeah, and well, especially as someone who's won, you know, huge awards, were you able to sort of separate that from yourself so that it didn't take over, you know? I have some friends who, like, will not go to award shows because they go, if I do that, then I'm going to start to think about that, and I don't want to think about all that stuff because it's not why I do this. Are you able to sort of separate and just take it in stride?
Listen, I mean, it's part of the job, you know, to be there, to appear, to do the red carpet and do all this bullshit. You have to do it because otherwise, you know, somebody's going to do it for you,
right,
instead of you. And eventually people will go to see that movie. So it's really about, I'm sure it's really useful, but unfortunately that's what people identify with. This is the way the system goes. So, I mean, I don't go everywhere, and I try to stay a little rare, yeah, in France mostly, you know, because it's work to go to these things, you know. It's a lot of, you know, you people judge you, and they he's like this, and then yeah, it's like people talk about you.
It's like high school.
Exactly.
But to win an award, we're talking about being goal-oriented. Some people go, oh, I just want to win an Oscar, I just want to win a César Award, or I just want to do this, and then they do, and then a lot of them go, oh, well, that moment's over, now what do I, you know? It's like when you make it all about the goal or all about the work, that's the other thing that's dangerous, because if you get the thing, then what happens? If you're not comfortable...
If it's the goal, then it's sad. It's kind of sad, but you know, no, I think it's with the time I realized that what I want personally at with what I do. I mean, I don't control a movie, of course. You know, I mean, I'm just an actor, so I surf on the wave that I've been presented to, a set with lines and stuff. But if you can at least come up with moments, you know, that people will remember forever. Mm-hmm. And I have this with actors. You know, sometimes you remember about, you know, one thing, you don't remember the story, you barely remember the movie, but you remember that moment when that actress or that actor turns in this beautiful frame and says that thing, and that's in your mind, and it becomes like something with all your life. Don't you have these kind of things?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And that's what I'm aiming for. That's what I want. Whatever the movie, whatever the part, whatever the language, you know, stuff that, you know, people don't forget.
But what's interesting about that is that you don't really have control. You have control over what you bring to the table, but you don't have any control over how they frame the shot or light it or what music or whatever. So you're really kind of, you're sort of hoping for a symphony to take place when you just have like a saxophone, you know, like you're hoping that it all works out.
You are, I mean, depending part, of course, but as an actor or as an actress, you are the solo artist. You are the guy who comes at the right moment and he goes, tip, da, 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 bam, up, and then you go for it. So you got everything is made so you can shine normally if you're in a good movie.
Yeah.
Shine out of what you do. Listen, man, you know what? I'm going to have to go because I'm going to cook for my kids now.
That's so adorable. I love that you're a good dad, man. I really enjoyed talking to you, and I really hope that, you know, all these questions weren't too annoying. I just...
not at all, man. It didn't feel like an interview at all. But we never talked about, like, Westworld.
I mean, well, so, everyone knows Westworld, and I'm going to record a thing at the beginning that says watch Westworld, and people are watching it anyway, but I'll remind them that you're in Westworld. And
that's okay.
Anything else you do? Is there anything else that's coming out that you have that you want to plug?
Let me think about it. I have a tendency to forget everything I just did. do I have anything in the box? No, I think the last thing I shot was this.
Okay.
No, I have another. No, I have a movie in a box in France. I don't know the international title though.
And then, lastly, what are you making for dinner?
You know what? I don't know yet, and that's why I'm gonna have to hurry. I have a lot of different stuff. You know, I got like veal, I got fish, I got rice, I got pasta. And so normally I open and I'm like, okay, tonight it's gonna be like. And then I get crazy and I just come up with something.
Live in the moment. Cook in the moment. I will close this by saying that I only know how to say one thing in French, which is what I said everywhere I went in Paris, which was, désolé, je ne parle pas français. Je suis un Américain stupide. That's all I know how to say.
you don't have to say You see, I'm just an American. Anyway, okay.
Yeah, we'll give them a pass on this one. They don't speak a lot of languages. We gotta let them go. How do we say, I usually end the podcast by saying, enjoy your burrito. It means enjoy your present as it's happening. How do I say enjoy your burrito in French?
Kiffe ton burrito.
Perfect. Perfect. Thank you, Vincent.
Kiffe ton burrito.
Kiffe ton burrito.
Merci.
Au revoir. Have a beautiful evening. Thank you so much, Vincent. It was a pleasure talking to you.
For that moment. Cheers.
Thank
Bye-bye.
You. The end. Bye.
ID10T scanning complete. Enjoy your burrito.